You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Got that first word out there. I was like, oh, there you are. And then I got right into the high.
Good morning, Jenna
Wolf. It's Friday.
Good to see you,
great
Chris Carter.
Week. First
week.
Things first, Jenna I'm Jenna Wolf.
Good to see you.
This is Nick Wright. That's the Hall of Famer.
That's
Chris
why y'all
Carter.
Need to script the opening.
Mm-hmm. No,
because
no,
both
no.
Of
the people
weird.
Want to see the weirdness. They embrace
oh,
the
surprise.
Weirdness.
Hey, what are you
I
doing
I didn't even
here?
Know you.
Camera,
we were just hanging out here all morning, and then a camera showed up. This is where
That's
we sit in hair and makeup and do all of our research. We have a big show on this Friday morning. Kevin Durant has more mind-blowing comments. Ezekiel Elliott has some new goals for himself. And OBJ is accounted for. So why don't we start with Odell Beckham Jr. He showed up for work yesterday. So did my friend Chris Carter, but we didn't make a big deal about that. You make a deal about it when you are Odell and you're entering the final year of your rookie deal. And you've let it be known you want a new contract. He did get some good news yesterday. Giants owner John Mara said Beckham's contract will come sooner rather than later. That's always good news. See, would it be a good idea for the Giants at this point to extend Odell before the season starts?
Well, it's not paramount to what they're doing to extend them before. The thing about it, it's nice, and you heard from the ownership and the Giants yesterday that they would begin to talk about a contract. The Giants are a great organization. And that's one of the things that I've always stood by as far as them, what they're going to do with their coach, what they decide to do with players. This organization that has done things the right way for a long period of time. So I thought they would do the right thing by OBJ, but I know they were conflicted based on the things that they had seen and the things that they had already addressed with him that he hadn't really gained control of. So I think that they're at the right point. He's in the last year of his contract. He is a superstar in the NFL. The Giants do need him, but they need him at a certain price. Now, I think that Odell, based on his injury from last season and some of the things off the field, he's probably come off of the
quarterback money.
Yes. Like he was delusional when he said, hey, I want to get quarterback money. I want to be the highest paid. Like, that's not necessary. Like, as long as they make him the highest paid wide receiver, which he should because it's his turn, and that's the way the market typically, if you're one of the top five guys, typically you can get into that slot, and that's where he should be. I don't think the Giants are delinquent. I think that the timing is right because what if in the last 3 months they had given him $80 million? Like, what sense would that have made for them? Because they don't have any guarantees that what Odell's going to do in the future. So I think that he's kind of earning back their trust. You can kind of see a push-pull between
yep.
the two.
By showing up for training yeah. camp, staying out of the limelight.
And I think that they've talked about that. Show up, and then we'll start having talks. It's not as if an owner's not going to tell the media first before they tell the player.
Okay.
So you know they've communicated this to him. Do the right things. Show up, be a good leader, and we'll do what we're supposed to do.
And it is time for Odell to get an extension, just like it's time for Khalil Mack to get an extension. Same draft. Just like it's time for Aaron Donald to get an extension. same draft. Just like it was time for Zach Martin to get an extension. He got his earlier than these other guys earlier this offseason, same draft. Those are four guys from what has turned out to be a really quality top half of the first round of the 2014 NFL draft. Mack was a defensive player of the year. Donald was a defensive player of the year. Odell Beckham, I've talked ad nauseum about through at this point in his career, 47 games. There's never been a more productive receiver. Zach Martin's probably the best guard in football. When the players, and we can talk about they signed a bad CBA, they should have gone more for about the, they shouldn't have done the rookie salary scale the way they did. But one of the things that the union, therefore the players, were told was the reason we are doing the new rookie salary structure is so money can be in reserve for our proven veterans. As odd as it sounds, Odell Beckham is now a proven veteran. Once you're into year five, you're a veteran in this league. He's as proven as any wide receiver in football, short of Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. And skill-wise, he's right there with them. So, yes, the only reason he wouldn't is if you think the off-the-field stuff has gotten to a level where it's untenable to keep him long-term. And while I understand Odell is certainly in the news more than Julio, and Odell is in the news as much as, but probably for worse reasons than Antonio Brown, on the scale of NFL players in the news, when it comes to Odell, it's mostly petty stuff. This isn't a guy who's been suspended by the league for conduct, steroids, drugs, anything aside from an in-game incident with Josh Norman. And so he is... Of our superstars,
I would say we don't know that for certain.
We know he hasn't been suspended. That's all I said. I just said that he hasn't been suspended by the league, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, that doesn't mean that if there's, because there are players in the league that are not, I'm not talking about steroid policy, but the recreational drug policy that are in the program that we don't know about. So I can't say definitively anyone's not in a program or is, but we know he hasn't missed NFL games due to a suspension. We know he hasn't been arrested since he's come into the league. We know these things. So on the scale of NFL player behavior, he's not a bad actor compared to his peers. As a whole, he might be a bad actor compared to some of the marquee faces of the league, but his play on the field, to me, supersedes that. I think the Giants feel the same way.
I don't think the Giants feel that way, and I don't think the Giants have more intel on Odell. I believe there's more information out there than you or the public might know, and that's the reason why they're slow on these guarantees, because the Dallas Cowboys, when they extended Zach Martin, and it's nice that you made the comparison because they're all in the same class, he's got zero character issues. They gave him the money. Man, we'll make you the highest paid. It's no problem. There's really no negotiating. Khalil Mack, he's up for a contract. Off the field, zero blemishes. Aaron Donald, last year's defensive MVP, zero blemishes. And all of them, based on their locker room and what their locker room says, they're great teammates. What I worry about Odell is, what are the Giants buying? Because I know the kid who came in from LSU, you know, top part of the first round. LSU produced a lot of professional receivers. So it's not as if we thought Odell Beckham was going to be Julio Jones. We didn't know how good he's going to be, thought he could be really special. But for the Giants, I mean, what are they buying? What are they? Are they getting the guy? Because he didn't have yellow hair when they drafted him. Now, since then, I mean, you look at the things that we've seen him do, and to me, all of it springing from the great catch that he makes against the Cowboys, but that to me hadn't helped him. Because he has changed and metamorphed himself with his tattoos and everything. And there's nothing wrong with those things. Ultimately, you got to be comfortable with yourself. And that's what I see Odell. I see the struggle where he's not comfortable. He's always changing and evolving. And that's why he's always on the move. Now, you can be a great football player and do that. But I don't think you can be the greatest wide receiver and do those types of things.
And there's one other thing, and it's something you brought up a little earlier. Can he do all those things and still be a good leader? Because who do the Giants have right now in that locker room that could come in, besides Eli Manning, who is a quiet leader, and say, you know, I'm commanding this money. I'm so good at what I do. I'm going to help lead this locker room.
Yeah, they are short of leaders. Now, they might have inside the locker room leaders that we don't know about, but when you're a bad football team, you start making excuses. We saw the bickering and everything that went on. Didn't seem like leadership because that was with veteran players. Now, that's the worst kind of locker room. It's something we expect younger players not to know. But when you got veteran players that have the locker room in chaos, don't know if they're going to play, players being suspended, walking off the field. So it's important that if you pay a guy $16 to $20 million, he should be a leader. There should be leadership qualities baked into that type of
money. Is there that expectation, Nick, with Odell that he can be?
We've had Snacks Harrison here talk about Odell. He feels comfortable letting Odell babysit his kid. He said we have heard teammates say that he is a good guy in the locker room, even some of the same teammates that don't necessarily like his sideline antics if they can be a distraction. So I don't right now what I say is Odell Beckham a leader. Only by example as far as performance and work ethic, but probably as you mentioned, once he gets that contract, there are other expectations that come with it. You're supposed to be at every offseason workout. There are things that come with it. But you said something that I find really interesting, which is, are those on the path to being the greatest? Not to being great, but being the greatest. And that is you using what Odell has spoken to you as his goals, not against him, but using it as,
yes.
Listen, are you on that path? And this is where I think we have to just take at least a slight step back when we're talking about this contract. A guy can be worthy of being the highest paid wide receiver in football for a few months or until the next guy comes up, being near at the top of the market, worth $16 million a year, even if he might be falling short of that ultimate goal. You don't have to.
No, to me, it's not a matter of being worth the money.
Right.
All right?
It's exactly not a matter.
I mean, Brandon Cooks is getting. So it's not a matter of being worth the
money. Exactly.
At some
right.
point, though, it's about beyond the money. He's got an image, all right? The one thing all players have in common, and this is the only thing that we have in common, there is no one the same size, height, weight, speed, what you do under pressure, can you play in the slot, can you play outside? What we have is time. And those things I showed Odell Beckham, when you're trying to be the greatest ever, those things don't assist you in trying to be there because you're wasting time.
And that's why I wanted to seize on that. Because some people think that Chris has, because people know your relationship with Odell, and I think some people think like something has happened between you and Odell. That is not the case. I'm going to speak for you here, and if you think I'm wrong, then yell at me. Chris is holding Odell to a standard that Odell has said he wants to hold himself to. The standard of, I want to be the greatest
to do
this.
And he has the talent.
And that's the other part. Chris knows.
I've had wide receivers tell me they want to be the greatest. And, so there's no chance.
Right. Or you say in your head, okay, that's, you know, good for you. Keep working at it. But at no point did you think it was possible. When Odell said that to you, I know you thought, you know what? It's on the board. There is a universe that exists where that could happen. And the standard you hold him to on TV and off TV is one of, are you making choices that lead you there? That is a high standard.
There's only two other receivers I've ever had the conversation with. One was Randy Moss, and that was the first day we drafted him. And I tell him the same thing I told Odell. And Randy, man, he wasted some time. But look how good he was. But he wasted
that time in Oakland.
And Larry Fitzgerald. And he wastes no time. So for me, when you enunciate that to me, there is a certain standard out there, and I have seen Randy Moss, man, he achieved that. He's getting his gold jacket next week. Larry Fitzgerald, man, they're forming his bust right now. They're doing the dread part of it. All right, Odell, he is one of those guys.
He didn't have the offseason you're talking about, Odell. This time. He didn't. It was not a quiet, let me spend all my time in the gym just focused on getting myself back and up and ready. All right, we're going to talk a lot more about this. Eric Mangini's going to join us a little bit later. Coming up on the other side, a disgruntled Kevin Durant responds to his critics. Hear from him next on First Things First. Kevin Durant just can't seem to stay away from the spotlight. After making headlines for a podcast exchange he had with CJ McCollum, one that extended onto Twitter, one that involved responding to total strangers in a defensive manner, KD spoke out about how exasperating the media has been. Take a listen.
It's just to the point where I know what you're upset at. Just say it instead of just trying to, you know, make excuses. You know what I'm saying? I got too many texts, or I talk too much on Instagram, or I talk too much on Twitter, or I don't know how to talk to my teammates, so I'm angry, I'm insecure, or sensitive. Tell me what the real problem is. Because every time I say something, I go about my business. And when I say something, House of Highlights and Bleacher Report, gas y'all up and y'all run with it. And as soon as I say something back, I'm the sensitive one. I mean, I know y'all trying to make me look crazy and discredit me and strip me of my credibility, but I see what you're doing, but I'm going to still keep standing.
We can't make it up. We can't make up the sole of his shoe or the cupcakes or the Twitter. We don't just make that stuff up. It happens. We talk about it. What was your reaction, Nick?
Listen, Okay, let me just back up for a second.
This reminds me of going to a really good restaurant. I mean, the reputation is great. The food was amazing. But the guy at the front who you met, like, he was a jerk. So it's not like the restaurant's bad. It just happened to be one person. I mean, Kevin Durant, like, stop.
Yeah.
Okay, you're the one told us that you had all the counts and everything. You told us this. So it's not. No, we're not trying to make you be crazy. Your basketball game is amazing. But you immature, and the social media is getting the best of you. So let me tell you, your Zagat rating on your game, basketball, real, real high. 8. Social media and how being a superstar, bro, you stink.
Well, and it is, by the way, to carry your analogy forward, that same restaurant used to have the most impeccable hostess ever imagined.
What happened to him?
Because it's the same person. I don't know what happened to him.
The guy used to just walk up there, reach in, give him what he wants right. With a handshake.
Exactly right.
And that would get you in.
Right. Okay. Listen, KD, it is not, I know how, it's not really a conspiracy if they're actually out to get you. I know. But it ain't a conspiracy, man. You had the same media that you're saying is out to get you, make you look crazy, make you look insecure. You had them eating out of the palm of your hand. It was, you the real MVP, Russ, you going to get one of these, signing my extension via Twitter, why is everyone teaming up together, okay, you know, Kevin Durant Steakhouse in OKC. And you made a choice that absolutely was your right, that did make some members of the media question your basketball integrity. But that was as far as it went. Everything since then is why you are now in this storm that Steph is not. That LeBron, despite being in the spotlight for 18 years, has never found himself in. That Anthony Davis was the most controversial thing he ever did. Trick us into thinking he shaved his unibrow. There are a handful of superstars in this league. We will dissect and analyze decisions, public moves. James Harden dealt with this. James Harden found out, I'm a little too famous to go to the strip club every night. I'm going to get criticized for that. Like, period, point blank. Maybe when I was the sixth man, I could do that.
Right.
Now that I'm MVP candidate, people are going to talk about that. Russ found out, okay, people are really going to talk about, do people hate me as a teammate? Am I a good or a bad guy?
Who found out yesterday? Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right, sure, there you go. So, Kevin Durant, it's not like we, the cabal that is the media, spun a wheel and said, oh, KD's turn. It is repeated decision after decision, all, by the way, involving some form of social media that has made us realize he is different than every other superstar we have in major American sports. If Aaron Rodgers was out there copping to having burner accounts, arguing with people via DM, and repeatedly talking about, I'm done with social media on your Sage Bill Simmons podcast, and then engaging in it, doing all these things, he'd get it too. Like, maybe it's unfair, but it's not. You're not getting picked on.
Imagine Tom Brady last year before the season where, Nick, I think it's on record, that the Patriots in this modern era were the largest favorite that we had ever seen as far as the NFL before the season to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we know the story that they didn't win, but just imagine Tom Brady telling another NFL quarterback, Blake Bortles, you're going to win the Super Bowl?
Forget Blake Bortles, unfair. Philip Rivers. You know what I mean? Because Bortles was down at the bottom. CJ's a near all-star. Say it to Philip Rivers. Say it to a guy who's good but not as good as you.
Yeah, those types of things. And you're right, and I never thought about it. As far as our superstars, Kevin Durant has put himself in a special position.
Why do you think this is still such a sore spot, because all of this stems from the one trigger he has, and that's this decision to go to Golden State. Why do we keep coming back to this? Is it just about the fact that he is just ridiculously insecure, and the same media that glorified him in Oklahoma City are the same ones are questioning this move?
This is one thing. The lifestyle that a superstar has to live in this day, it's different. And it is difficult. And you have to work at it every single day. A lot like to get a jump shot like he has, you have to work on that on a repetition basis. Now, he might not be doing it every day, but you don't shoot the basketball unless you have put hours upon hours upon hours dealing with the social media and dealing with being a superstar and being rich. Man, it takes hours and hours of repetitions of doing and saying, and sometimes not saying what you want to say. That part, Kevin Durant, he hasn't perfected that. His jump shot in his game, he has perfected.
This is the thing. KD is almost never criticized for basketball, because he shouldn't be. He's a great and all-time great player. He seems to be a really good teammate for the team he's currently on. Now, whether he'll talk bad about you once he leaves, whatever, but we've seen other guys do that. He does, and we don't talk enough about any of the guys that do this stuff, but he does amazing things charitably. I'm talking tens of millions of dollars in his community.
Mm-hmm.
He, for some reason, though, does not understand that part of the trade-off of being this level of famous, this level of wealthy in major American sports, is we are going to dissect behavior that diverges from what we perceive as mm-hmm. the norm. And his use of social media is so far abound from every other superstar we have that, of course, we're going to talk about it. And so you use the word insecure. I don't think he's insecure about many things. I think he's uncertain about the decision he made. But the word I will use, or the phrase, is a lack of self-awareness. He, for some reason, seems to be in denial about how famous he is and what goes along with it. Being rich and famous seems, at that level, seems to be a pretty dope existence. There are a few drawbacks. You can't date an adult film star without it being written about. Jimmy Garoppolo found out. Sorry, I wasn't saying you did that. My apologies. For example, Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, you can't just be exchanging barbs on Twitter
the way
Dusty can. And so,
scrutinized to the umpteenth degree.
That's part of the deal, fair or not. And every other major American superstar gets it.
Is, exactly.
Everyone else gets it.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, Gronk speaking out on rumors of his holdout. That's next on First Things First. Stories to start your morning now. Pete Carroll had some harsh words for Earl Thomas. He said, quote, he should be here and he's not here. See, how do you think this situation ends?
They're not going to sign him to a contract extension. They've moved on from the great memories of the past, and I believe they're going to have to trade him. They need to find some place where they can trade him before the season and get some value out of a very, very good player who does not want to be there just for one season.
You said trade him before the season. I think they will have to trade him. I'm not certain it'll be before the season. If you remember last year, the Seahawks added a player midseason who extended his holdout through 7 weeks of the year in Dwayne Brown. Like, they might really call his bluff and see if he's willing to not only miss training camps, but miss game checks before they end up pulling the trigger. But I don't think he's going to show up anywhere without a contract extension.
All right, big milestone for Carson Wentz. Eagles couldn't be happier. He participated in full team non-contact drills yesterday. Chris, do you expect Carson Wentz to be good to go week one now?
I'm looking forward to it. That's big for him not to start on the pup and to be able to be there with the first team. He's got still a little bit of limited. He's not going to do the full team duties. He'll do 7-7 individual work. But it's great, too, for his teammates to see him out there. To get to this point, it's monumental from an injury standpoint. Now it's a matter of confidence, getting the confidence in that league leg. And then now we want to see some bodies around him live in those preseason games. That becomes very important.
But to answer your question, yes. I mean, that week, they obviously will be playing the first game of the year. I believe it's against Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so they have the shortest offseason by just a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, if he's able to do this at the end of July, what's he going to be able to do at the beginning of September? My guess is start an NFL football game.
All right, moving on. Jarvis Landry has some high hopes for the Browns this year. Well, I mean, if you consider scoring 40 points a game and winning the Super Bowl, high hopes. Landry says the Browns have the potential to do just that. 40 points a game.
40 points a game, see?
Winning the Super Bowl. Nick, can the Browns do such a thing?
You were on a team that set the NFL record at the time for points scored in a season, 98 Vikings. Y'all didn't even sniff 40 a game. So Jarvis Landry says, eat that, 98 Vikings. How about you, 07 Pats? 40 a game. Going to break all the records. I'm excited to watch.
Worst to first.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what's not going to happen during the season. We're not going to be getting good sound bites from him. All right? Let's try to win a game. All right? My sports fans, let's slow down. Let's slow down a little bit. You haven't even played one game with the Browns. You haven't even been in the Browns organization.
He brought the winning legacy that he developed in Miami.
Oh, yeah. All Cleveland. Those victories he had against New England. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah. Oh. Jarvis, be quiet.
You shoot for the stars. At no. least you land.
No. But it's not if you shoot yourself, though, in the head.
Finally, Rob Gronkowski considered a lot of things this offseason. Among them, should I retire and should I not play anymore? One thing he was not considering, however, was holding out. He made a point to let everyone know that in camp yesterday. So you see, how important is Gronk to this Patriots offense?
Yeah, Gronk lets you know. Gronk is sometimes I don't do the smartest things, but I am pretty smart because holdouts don't work in New England. Now, he threatened them with the offseason. That's about as far as you can threaten them. Yeah. But you're not going to miss time in New England. I think that he's not telling the truth as far as him considering a holdout. He considered it, knew it wasn't going to work, or the Pats came to him and said, listen, we'll give you a little something, give you a little love, move some of the chips over here, move them to the front so you can benefit from it. But Gronk, it's not that important. He's a great player. He's injury prone. I need to see Gronk run on the field for the first game. Okay. That's the most important thing for Gronk. With Edelman being out with the suspension, they're trying to trade Malcolm Mitchell. Who are you going to trade him to? Like, nobody.
A conditional seventh-round pick.
They need Gronk healthy for the first game of the season. That's important. No, you're not going to hold out against the New England Patriots.
Even if he subscribed to the Nick Wright School of Negotiations, which tends to always be the advice for the player to take a hard line.
Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of graduates.
No, but it works with Dez Bryant. Oh, no.
It worked with Dez Bryant. It seems to have worked with Julio Jones. We're 1-1 at the moment. I would have said, let's not bluff New England. Let's not see if Bill Belichick will not only trade me, but do the opposite of what he did with Jimmy Garoppolo. If you remember Jimmy G, he had what seemed like a better offer from Cleveland, but he appreciated everything Jimmy G had done and wanted him to have the best situation possible. So he took a slightly inferior offer to San Francisco with the added benefit of Hoyer coming over. I feel like, man, Belichick's not afraid to not only trade you, but trade you to a place you don't exactly want to go. And so, Gronk, it's very hard to have leverage in New England if you're not Tom Brady. And so I think Gronk is playing this properly. And if I'm New England and he wants a little extra money, I don't mind doing it, but I tie it to not necessarily snaps, but games played. Like, hey, you get a bonus at your 14th game on the game day roster. Things like that to where if he's healthy for the full season, then he can get a bump in pay.
Quick question. Gronk is not a Belichick type of guy, but yet he's sort of been there. Him and Brady have kind of been there for a while now. You think Belichick really likes Gronk or has maybe a special place for him?
This is the thing. Gronk is a Belichick guy. You know the reason? He's great at what he does. And also, you get value from a roster standpoint. You got a guy that can play three positions. You can put him in the backfield. He can be the lead blocker. You can put him on the end of the line of scrimmage, and he can be one of the best end of the line of scrimmage blockers. Or you can put him outside. He can be an elite wide receiver. So, no, he's the perfect. He brings more value to the roster. They're not overpaying to have him. And if you can ask all Gronk's teammates, Gronk has never had a bad day. So you're talking about a guy you don't have to motivate, a guy who's going to show up and work hard every day? No. That's what Bill Belichick so.
He doesn't miss assignments. He's a smart football player.
You couldn't play all those positions and not be a really smart football player.
So I think what Jenna, I think a lot of people think exactly what you said, which is he doesn't seem like a Belichick guy because of his person. I don't even know if it's his personality.
It's a big personality.
The persona that he has developed.
He's only got a big personality for you guys.
Right. Outside
there,
of the
he's
facility.
Not.
Right? That's the key. Is like his branding and the crews and all that stuff.
Branding.
That's outside of the facility. I don't think Belichick cares much about that.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys now. Ezekiel Elliott is gearing up for a full season of play, unlike last year when he had to serve a 6-game suspension starting in week 10. Despite missing that time, he still rushed for nearly 1,000 yards, had 7 touchdowns. Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones is all in on Zeke.
In the short term, I think he wants to be one of the great ones to play the game. And I think he's a hardworking guy who knows what it takes. And, I think he's, it's a process. And I think he continues to mature. And as Jason said, he's taking a leadership role now. And, I expect him to really step up, I think, and have a great year this year.
All right, see, what do you think Ezekiel Elliott can improve on to do that, to be one of the great ones to play this game?
Well, now the way you judge running backs in this era is very, very different, because you can't be one-dimensional and be a great back. We just don't see it. People say, well, you have Leonard Fournette. He had one season. We'll see where that goes as far as his career. But when you look at L. Bell, when you look at Todd Gurley, these guys are three-down backs. They catch the ball out of the backfield substantially better than Zeke does. So that's what he's got to be able to work on. And that's just being a pass catcher. And that could be one of the hidden gems to their lack of a dominant wide receiver is, how do we get Zeke involved in the passing attack? I believe that this will be his career high as far as targets, career high as far as yards, career high as far as catches, because that's something that they have not tapped into, and it's something the NFL does not have a book on Zeke. So he is a great runner of the football, and I expect a lot like his third season at Ohio State, where he dominated the Big Ten, championship and the college football playoff,
dominated,
ran through
Alabama,
Oregon, over 200 yards rushing in both of those games. I expect tremendous things. And the only reason why we weren't talking about this was because of the setback that he had last year. And the discussion was all these off-the-field allegations. Now, because no one can question his work ethic. No one can question his durability. And he loves to play football. So I agree with Stephen Jones. Stephen Jones and them, they know what they drafted. Like, and he is going to be a great football player. And this is just the beginning.
I'm glad you brought up his third year at Ohio State, because people, I think, just think about it in its totality. I was watching a clip just the other day. 3 minutes left, college football semifinal. Ohio State only up 6. And what does Zeke do? 75 yards straight through the entire Alabama defense to beat Alabama, a team everyone thought was going to go on to win the championship. He's been a special guy throughout every phase of his football career.
Yes.
The one thing, like you mentioned, the pass catching. So I thought back to the moment when Alvin Kamara was here and you talking to Alvin Kamara off the air about the stem of his route and not bananaing the route, is I think the terminology you used. In my mind's eye, when I think of big plays Zeke has made out of the backfield as a pass catcher, it's swing passes, it's screen passes. Mm-hmm. It's not the types of things where what you're talking about with Kamara, where he's lining up in the slot, where he's lining up as a receiver and going out and doing that. How hard are those skills going to be for him to develop as far as just the route running component of it?
It's not that, because he's the type of athlete. He's a great athlete. He was a high hurdler and a sprinter in high school in track. He has good hand-eye coordination. He just is at Ohio State. They didn't throw him the ball an awful lot. He happened to go to Dallas Cowboys, where, man, they pushing people back. They just have not thrown him the ball yet. It's a skill that I believe he has. I don't believe he'll ever be the receiver that Todd Gurley is. I don't believe he'll ever be the receiver that L. Bell is, because they're really, really special. But also swing passes. But watch the screen game, because Dallas got 3 or 4 linemen that can really run in space. And screens are very, very good against zone coverage. They're going to get a lot of zone coverage because their lack of speed and lack of explosive wide receivers, you don't have to play them a lot of man-to-man.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Is he going to see a little more pass catching because of the lack of wide receivers that the Cowboys have right now?
Even if Dez Bryant was there, Jason Witten was there, this would still be the most impactful season as a pass catcher, because that's how you evolve. That's how you evolve as a player. And When you start, the NFL starts to understand what you like to do, and they try to force you to do things you want. This is something that he has not been able to do, not because he doesn't like to do it, just situational.
And as leagues change, players evolve. You say all the time when we do historical comparisons to 80s NBA players, and you say, man, if they needed to shoot the three, they would have learned to shoot the three. Like, it wasn't a part of the game, so you can't hold against him. A guy made 14 threes in a season. He wasn't asked to do it. As for a running back, to be the Todd Gurley, to be paid at the top of the market, if pass catching has to be a part of it, the guys with the skill sets for it, I saw Kareem Hunt in Kansas City last year. It's a mid-round draft pick. He had 500 yards receiving. Why? He had to develop that skill. It was something that the new NFL, you've got to be able to do all of it. And a guy like Leonard Fournette is, I think, going to become more of the outlier. A guy that's just considered going to run straight into the line. And so I think Zeke has the skill set to be able to develop.
Right, you're in too many three-receiver sets, too many nickel defenses. So you're, if you come into the league and that's your one thing you do, you're a banger, you're only going to be first and second down. So it's going to hurt you as far as where you draft. It's going to hurt as far as the role that you play on the team.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up next, should Carmelo Anthony's latest comments have the Rockets reconsidering signing him? Carmelo drama next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. You know who's here. Former NBA head coach, associate commissioner of the Big East, Stu Jackson.
Good to see you, Stu.
He's back.
Stu, it rolls off the tongue.
Truth teller.
Yeah.
Truth teller. Absolutely.
Phone call
I like
maker.
It.
Contact,
I might
negotiator,
have to negotiate with the Big East right here.
Right?
Nick Wright out, Stu in. Let's do this.
Well, I didn't know he was replacing Nick.
No, you got no. The Big East is where it's at.
Yeah, I got you. I got
no doubt. Absolutely.
Let's talk some Carmelo Anthony, Stu. Carmelo was with the Thunder. He is currently a Hawk, and he's expected to get waived and join the Rockets over the weekend. He's got a lot of things, and he is a lot of things. What he isn't, apparently, is a role player. That, according to himself. He told Jemele Hill of Undefeated, I know how to play this game of basketball. I've been playing it for a long time. When I feel like I'm ready to take that role, then I'll take that role. Only I know when it's best for me to take that role. I am not going to do that in a situation where I still know my capabilities and still know what I can do. All right, Stu, we bring this up because the assumption is that he will need to change his role if he does sign with the Houston Rockets, at least in some capacity, maybe not in the beginning, maybe a little closer to the end. Should the Rockets reconsider signing him, given his desire to remain a starter?
Well, I think it's worth a conversation between the Rockets and Carmelo before they sign. The one thing that concerned me about the statement, I don't know how the two of you felt, is that he's not really the person that determines what his role is in terms of what's best for the team. That's up to the coach, and that is his role. And I was a little bit surprised, you know, before signing this deal that he didn't come out and say, hey, listen, I will do whatever it takes to vault the Houston Rockets to the championship level. Whatever role I'm asked to play, I will play. That would have been the more appropriate response. So that concerned me a little bit. And then technically, Carmelo, listen, I absolutely love this guy as a person. He is a terrific human being. He has been a great scorer in this league.
I hear a but coming.
But.
There it is.
At this stage of his career, entering his 15th year, coming off a year where, you know, he had lows in assists, field goal percentage.
His worst points, year in every category.
Worst year ever. It might be best if he is a bench player. And not only that, his game is tailor-made for the bench.
So explain, I know what you mean, but explain what you mean by that.
Well, Carmelo is at his best, and I've seen him at his best, particularly on the national team and Olympic team. He's at his best when he is a catch-and-shoot player, where he is a player that catches one, two dribbles, pull up, whether you throw it into the post, quick move, score. His plays are amazing. His ability to get offensive buckets, amazing. And that, I feel, is best served coming off the bench where he can be featured as a scorer, not within the context of a starting unit.
Listen, I think the starter bench thing actually is not the biggest issue here, because if the Rockets were to sign him, he probably, with the loss of Ariza, as you talked about yesterday, loss of Bamute, he actually probably, I think, would be a starter, at least in name. He'd be out there for the starting lineups. And I've been adamant that I think that Carmelo has good basketball left, and that I think what happened in Oklahoma City could be a learning experience, a humbling experience for him. These comments are troubling. Period, point blank. These are, Chris and I have been, before you started joining us on the show, while you've been joining us on the show, Chris and I have been going back and forth on this for a month now, couple months now, and I've been adamant that I think we can see not only a humbled Carmelo Anthony, but a Carmelo Anthony that understands where he is at this point in his career. These comments fly totally in the face of that. Said, I'm not a role player yet. I know how good I am. I know what I've got left in this league. And it so much so that if I were Daryl Morey in the Houston Rockets, if I was certain I was signing him, I'm now having let's call another meeting. Let's call another meeting. Let's see, is this Carmelo public bravado when, you know, with Jemele Hill finds him at a Nike event and he's, you know, just kind of, you know, that's to the media. Is this how he actually feels when he's just with us? And what does he think his role will be? Because if he thinks he's joining the Rockets as the third star, that was not the role he found himself in Oklahoma City. And the stars on the Rockets are as good, if not better, than the stars on Oklahoma City.
The essence of team sports, to me, will always be this. You can't just play the game because you love the game. You have to play the game because you love the essence of, I want to learn more about the game so I can play the game better. And you can go to the highest level as USA Basketball or go to Little Johnny as an 8-year-old. He can say he loves the game. His parents signed him up to put him in a league. You know what that league has? Coaches. You know what those coaches have? They have a certain certification that they would know enough about basketball at every level to be able to get this kid maximize whatever his ability is. And I tell all my kids this. I don't care how good they are. That being Joey Boza, Larry Fitzgerald, Vince Carter, or all the other players that I've worked with. You have to submit your talent at the door to that coach and that organization. I know you think you know what's best, but you need to let them mold you into what you should do as an athlete. So when you get out of the essence of sports, I'm not going to listen to the coach. Well, go play golf. Go play tennis. Go do something on your own, because if you're going to be on a team, it's up to those coaches and managers to say, you know, what's best for me? My career would be totally different if Dennis Green hadn't called me up and said, you know something? You my little scoring forward. You can score. I'm going to put you in the slot. You got more space. It's basketball on AstroTurf. I'm getting ready to make you famous. And I was like, I ain't never played in the slot. I'd be the tallest slot receiver maybe in the history of the NFL. But I believed in Dennis Green. And I believe what my mom told me a long time ago. If you're going to play team sports, you're going to listen to the coach. If not, go play some tennis. And I'm in the project. She didn't really mean that. Or go play golf, which she knew I couldn't do. But my mom taught me that, Stu, at a very, very young age. And sports has not changed.
But you hit it on the head. And when you're on a team at a championship level, it's all about sacrifice. That's what makes the machine work.
And I know he has it in him. You know the reason why I have it in him? Because you mentioned USA Basketball. And when he shows up, there's some type, something happens in his brain that's different than what we're seeing.
Yeah, and he was great in that role with USA Basketball, coming off the bench. He was a terrific scorer, but he has so many examples around him. I mean, look on his soon-to-be team. I mean, you look at a guy like Gordon. Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
Is there anybody that doesn't think that Eric Gordon's not a starter? Is there anybody that doesn't think that Andre Iguodala with the Golden State Warriors isn't a starter?
But I mean, do have great matchups with that second unit.
Exactly.
So I can see what you're saying.
And when you're playing Carmelo Anthony against second unit players, oh, my goodness, I'll take my chances with Carmelo Anthony.
It's also one of the reasons we talk so much and so highly about Tom Brady, in that this year that he's entering, having played, he's still coachable. He still wants to learn. He's still okay to listen to whatever Belichick has
to
say.
And he's not comfortable with all of it either. It's
correct.
Not like they're doing everything Tom wants.
Right. So I think one of the things we talked about is that maybe getting waived might have humbled Carmelo Anthony a little bit. And I think we said, hey, you know what? Maybe this was the eye-opening moment where he's like, I need to reevaluate what my role is to what team, and it doesn't appear like that
and
happened.
He also talks about in this interview with Jemele Hill, and credit to her for getting to talk to him about this in long form. She did a really good job with it, that he was initially embarrassed, that he did talk to his wife and his family and saying, I mean, I'm not going to accept a buyout. Like, because he thought it was an embarrassing moment. And they talked and they said, hey, this is what happens in the league. Like, if a team doesn't want you and you don't want to be there, it's just like the new NBA. And he came to terms with it. But he didn't take, it would appear, from these comments, I'm not writing in stone, the next step that I assumed that if he chose the Rockets, he would be taking. Because he has another option in Miami. And if you just want to start, get buckets, both states got no income taxes, both teams got one of your best friends on it, and just see, you know what, I want to average 20 another year. Like, that's important to me. More power to you. But if he was choosing Houston, I have been under the impression it is understanding why Houston would be choosing him. And these comments are the first time that if I'm Daryl Morey, I'm like, are we better with him?
All right, Stu, we'll see you a little bit later on the show. We got to take a break. Coming up, will Odell Beckham get the long-term deal that he wants? All signs point to maybe. Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini joins us now. Good morning. Happy Friday, sir.
Good to see you.
We are talking some Odell Beckham this morning. He showed up for work yesterday. So did coach, but we didn't make a big deal about it. You make a big deal about it when you're Odell and you're entering the final year of your rookie deal and you've let it be known that you want a new contract.
He did coach get some... got a new contract. That's why he showed up. He's here. Y'all didn't run out of business.
Yeah, y'all didn't know coach was holding out before.
Tap, tap. Let's see it.
Jokes. Go ahead. He did get some good news yesterday, Odell, that is. Giants owner John Mara said Beckham's contract will come sooner rather than later. All right, coach, would it be a good idea for the Giants to extend Odell before the season starts?
Well, I am really happy with whoever's advising Odell right now and the way that Odell has approached this, because I think it's absolutely the right way. When we were talking about this before, and there were, whether it was the off-the-field issues or was him threatening to not come to mini camp, not come to training camp, all those things, that's absolutely the wrong way to go about it, especially with a new GM and a new head coach. So he takes the radically different approach. He's there for everything. He shows that he's bought in. He shows that he's working. He shows that he's willing to commit to the new program. And I think that's why there's now openness by the organization to start doing this. Now, the issue is going to become, what is he looking for? What are they looking for? And you're hoping that this doesn't now become contentious when they start opening the negotiations and it's not where he wants it to be right away.
One thing coaches and organizations, and I've seen, they wonder when they draft a player what he's going to be like when we get him in our building, in our cities, knowing that the NFL life, the reality of it's a tough adjustment. A lot of the kids fail, how you're going to support them. But what I've seen is, on those second contracts, teams like to be able to predict based on what they've seen in those first 3 to 5 years. Man, because people think, well, if I get money, it's going to change it. No, money doesn't change you. It makes you a bigger what you already are. So as a coach, Coach Mangini is wondering, if I give this kid this money, who's he going to turn into? What Odell are we going to get? Are we going to get the Odell from the draft? Are we going to get sensational second season where people love him? Are we going to get him urinating as an end zone celebration, you know, as a dog? We're going to get him at the IG model in some foreign land in a hotel? Like, which one are we going to get? Now, what I tell people is what you see early, when you give them money, you'll see more of what you saw early. Now, I'm hoping that's not with Odell, but that is the dilemma that the Giants have with someone who has the things like Odell.
And Chris is absolutely right. Whatever, once you pay the player and you can't move on from the contract and you have no leverage as an organization, they're going to be whoever they are. And whoever you pay is what you believe in. So I may say that Chris is our leader. I may say that Nick is our leader. But whoever you pay in the locker room, everybody in the organization says, that's what you believe in. That's what you say is okay. That's what is acceptable to this organization. And that's the way that the group goes. So you want to be right, especially you have to be right on these second contracts. He's doing the right things now. Do I think it's a fundamental shift in who he is?
How do you answer that as an organization? How do you be right? You say you have to be right. How do you know? We've seen Odell change.
You don't know.
You don't know. It's calculated risk. This kid is not the same guy that we saw 4 or 5 years ago.
Hold on a second. It's calculated risk.
That's true.
That is true. But what's also true is, I think with Odell, the money changing or revealing him is actually less of an issue for good or for bad, because he's got the Nike money already. Like, he wasn't working just on that rookie contract. He got the biggest endorsement deal in NFL history for a non-quarterback, maybe even for a quarterback. It was $80 million, not all at once, but from Nike. So, now, maybe that led to more bad behavior, maybe whatever it was, but it's not a guy, I think, that was acting a certain way in reserve because I got to get my big money. Listen, whether they pay him or not, I think Odell, for good or for bad, is going to be about who we've seen. And in my eyes, the juice is worth the squeeze with him. He's such a great football player. He is such a game changer for your offense. And he's not a guy we're worried about getting arrested. He might have
you
some...
You don't know that, Nick. Nick, you don't know that. You can't say that.
You
can't say that.
See, here's what I can say. Since he's been in the NFL, he has not been arrested. Since he's been in the NFL, his one league suspension was from an on-the-field act.
That's such a low bar. We could say this. He hasn't been arrested yet.
Do you follow the NFL offseason?
Have been a ton of guys who have, but the majority of NFL players have not been arrested. The majority of NFL players have off-field problems.
I don't think Odell's going to get arrested or anything, but I'm not even going to quantify that as a statement. Like, why should I be? Hey, man, we can sign this guy to an extension. You know why? He's not going to get arrested.
No.
That's not what I'm saying.
I agree with you.
I'm not. What I'm saying is, what are you risking? Like, what are we actually talking about? A couple 15-yard penalties a year for end zone celebrations. Bake that into it.
I believe there's a few more things out there than you know.
Yeah, look, when you say that the juice is worth the squeeze, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, we don't really know what the squeeze is. We don't know how hard it is during the week to deal with this player. And you only find out publicly a fraction of the things that happen and how a guy really operates in the classroom, in the meeting rooms, on the practice field. So it's hard for us to say how much work is it to get him to Sunday.
Would we all agree that the person or that knows the most about what Odell is the owner of the Giants? Would we agree?
No, I would not.
No.
I'm not even close.
Hold on. You're talking about
the
Odell?
You think the owners are at the meetings? You think the owners are at the installs? You think the owners are at every practice? You think the owners are in the weight room?
The owners are puzzled by his behavior.
No.
Owners typically know the least because it's like everybody's Eddie Haskell when they come up to him so good to see you.
Of course. The point that I was trying to make is don't you think before an owner, before John Mara signs off, any of these guys sign off on this type of extension, whatever intel that the team has, that the league has on a player, the owner gets briefed on it. I would imagine that when you have good ownership, a good organization, they are not signing off on what you're talking about.
I'm certain the Giants know exactly what I know.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The Giants know.
They don't know more than I know.
Okay, that's fine, but they know what you know. That's my exact point. There aren't, and so if we heard a year ago the Giants ownership say, we want to give him an extension. We are now hearing again Giants ownership say, we are working on an extension. So knowing all these things, they believe the play on the field merits whatever the other
takes. At a certain number.
Right, of course. And that certain number, though, is, we anticipate, highest paid receiver. Not quarterback money, but highest paid receiver.
Or, Nick, they believe they wanted to pay him last year. They didn't. Now they're bringing it up again. Something happened. All the stuff that you say is not that big a deal because he wasn't arrested was enough to make them
I didn't
hit
say
the
it's
brakes
not
just
that
for
big of a deal because he
you
was not arrested.
Okay, you
what I said was, no. What I said was this, is that because Odell is one of the most famous athletes we have, I believe we overemphasize things like the red carpet, the celebrations, and in its totality.
I don't overemphasize it because I've been an NFL receiver. I've been exactly where he's trying to go. Everybody else might be blown out of proportion, but I know what it takes. I'm not guessing. I'm not getting someone's opinion. You know the reason why? I live that life. So I got pretty good experience, all right? I know what Odell is going through, and we're trying to help him through that. Do I know what's going to happen? No. Do the Giants know what's going to happen? Heck no. Does the NFL know? No, they're praying, and they got their fingers crossed.
Right. I'm not trying to act like anyone can see the future. But I think what you said there, Chris, is the most important part. You've lived that life, and you hold someone who has communicated to you they want to be the greatest ever, has the talent to make that a possibility, to a standard. And it is a high standard because it's the standard he wants to hold himself to.
Just like Carmelo, man. Do what you say.
Right.
Don't say something and do something.
Yeah, don't tell me you love me. Show me you love me. And let your actions.
We love you, Coach.
But it's true.
Let's
don't
see that consistently.
Coach, we love you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll leave it there. Stick around, Coach, because we love you. Coming up, an NFL scout says the Patriots couldn't even beat the Browns if they didn't have Tom Brady. That's next on First Things First.
We're giving it out this morning. We got love.
An exclusive documentary series is coming to Fox. Follow the NFL's number one draft pick as he navigates his way through the complex world of professional football. All the Way Up, Baker Mayfield, Part 1, Sunday at 3 Eastern on Fox, or stream it on the Fox Sports app.
Cannot wait to watch that. DVR the whole series.
Back here with Coach Mangini. We're talking Patriots. Even though they made it to the Super Bowl last season, even though they seem to make it to the Super Bowl almost every season of late, with a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame quarterback, some in the league aren't impressed with New England's roster. One NFL scout went so far as to say, take Brady off that roster, you don't beat the Browns. All right, Coach, I'll let that marinate for just a second. Is there any truth to that?
Well, when you look at it, if you look over the last 1,000 days of football, or somewhere around 1,000 days of football, the Browns have won one game against San Diego. It was a barn burner at the late part of the season. I think it was like 20-17. And the Patriots have won a Super Bowl. And then they went to another Super Bowl. And Tom Brady was suspended for the first four games of the Super Bowl season, but they went 3-1. So I don't know if this
two backup quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is purely Madden-based, like based off the rankings of each player. If you did it head-to-head.
Coach, I'm so glad. When I saw this on the board at 5 this morning, I wanted to fire off into someone. I'm so glad you brought some levity to the situation.
Go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt
you. Well, no, it's one of those things where to just look at the raw people on the roster, I guess you could do that and try to project out, but it's how do the pieces come together? How are they going to be coached? How do they operate as an organization? The track record, the game plan, there's so many elements that go beyond the quarterback. You need a good quarterback to consistently be successful, but you need a lot of other good things to consistently be successful.
If we may take this figuratively and not literally for a moment, because obviously, listen, you mentioned that they were suspended 4 games, they went 3-1. He missed a year, they went 11-5, right? Like, and I mean, and maybe you think Matt Castle then is better than Brian Hoyer now, but it's not drastically so. So let's just take it figuratively for what this is saying that I do agree with is Tom Brady does as good of a job as any quarterback I've ever seen at making do with whatever weapons are around him and sometimes lesser talent on the team. I think Brady is great at that. And if you just want to look at this as a tribute to Brady's greatness at being able to win no matter who's around him, I'll concede that point. But what this does not do is the flip side of it, which is recognize how great Bill Belichick and the coaching staff is at scheming, at exploiting other teams' weaknesses, at getting the other team to create unforced errors on their behalf, at what you talk about all the time, like more games being lost than won, at having guys other than Tom Brady so buttoned up that they're not, one of your pet peeves, reaching for the pylon when they know if I don't get there and it goes, it's 20 yards in the other team's ball. Like, the Pats are as good at that as any team I've ever seen in sports, and this quote doesn't give them any of that credit.
Yeah, it's idiotic. There's too many components to football. If you could just simplify it to one player, like, the game would be very, very simple. But the game, it's not that simple. And I hope he's a former scout. I hope he's not scouting for someone. If they are, they're not winning a whole bunch of games because it's stupid. And he's trying to take some shot at Bill Belichick as if he couldn't coach. I think the quote was from the great Bear Bryant. I take mine and beat yours, and I'll take yours and beat you with mine. Like, so I give the utmost respect to Bill Belichick in the atmosphere that he creates, the think tank of football that makes it Every situation in football, very important. I'm just going to give you two situations in football. Punting the football and kicking field goals. If there's any team in the history of football, just on those two simple plays, I would take New England. You know the reason why? They always give up one of the least as far as yards return. And kicking game-winning footballs in the history of this game, no one has been better. So you can give Tom Brady credit for all that. But no, I'm going to give the guy that's making all the decisions and has changed Tom Brady's career. Because I can tell you, you wouldn't know Tom Brady if he was drafted by the Browns. All right? I tell you, 99% of all the players ever played in this league are system players. And Tom Brady is right there in the front of the class saying, I'm thank God that I had a system and it was the New England Patriot in the Patriot way.
And New England doesn't have a lot of stars because that's not what's promoted there. The whole attitude is it's we before me, and people go in and the idea of team is important. There's a lot of old school values that related to football that are part of that core philosophy, and it's not about your brand. It's not about how much attention I can get. It's not about any of those things. It's just about collectively what do we need to do this week to beat whoever we're playing.
Why is it so hard when you look at this Patriots team to point to one element and saying this is what makes them so good?
Well, I don't think it's that hard to point to that one element. I really believe it's philosophically how they approach it. Now, it's hard to set up that environment. I've tried it two different times. There's been other coaches that have tried it as well. Mm-hmm. It takes time. It takes a commitment. It's not easy to get people to start thinking in terms of the bigger picture and the greater good as opposed to their own self-interest. It's a very rocky road. But once you establish that, it's pretty magical what you can do.
And Tom Brady has benefited from all that decision-making. I can guarantee you Tom Brady's career is not the same if he's selecting the wide receivers. I can guarantee you he wouldn't have the guys that Belichick selected for him. And having people orchestrate an offense to give him what he can do, all that, man, like, there's so many components and there's so many things they've done to help out Tom that if we get to the end of Tom's career, like, let's just slow down a little bit thinking, you know, that it's Tom and not the Patriots, okay? It's the Patriots that produced Tom Brady.
And you look at Nick Saban and what he's done at Alabama, and to me it's the same type of thing. A lot of Alabama players are drafted very high, but they don't have anywhere near the career that they had in college because collectively they're so much better.
And while this offseason it seemed like the quote du jour for everybody was Patriots don't have fun, we have more fun, they don't get to do all this. For years, what we have heard from guys who went through New England was, man, I have never learned the rules as much as I did my year in New England. I've never been as prepared for specific opponents. You're talking about the Patriots punter, Belichick drilling them. This other team has a left-footed punter. We got to practice on that. Like, the specific intricacies has always been a part of the Patriot lore, and that's not about Tom Brady.
All right, got to take a break. Coach, stick around. We'll see you a little bit later in the show. Coming up, why is Kobe Bryant helping the Celtics? That's next on First Things First. First things first, we are going viral. Celtics forward Jason Tatum averaged 19 a game in the playoffs. Pretty impressive for a rookie. However, he isn't satisfied, and he's been working out hard this summer. Check out this picture of Tatum working out with Kobe Bryant.
So
learning from the best.
This is, there's a great mashup going around online. I think we showed some of it on the show last week of Tatum mimicking Kobe's exact moves. This is really cool thing for Kobe to do. A player that grew up idolizing him, who now gets to learn directly from him. I love this. This is like passing the game on. I think it's so awesome.
Yeah, it's great for Kobe, but it's what he's supposed to do. People taught him the game just like his dad. He grew up with the NBA legacy, and that's the way you pass on the tradition of great basketball to the younger generation.
Yeah, really cool.
That's what Shaq is doing now with all with all his wisdom he's passing along. Time now for some stories to start your morning. Rob Gronkowski considered a lot of things this season, among them, should I retire? Should I not play anymore? One thing he was not considering, however, was holding out. He made a point to let everyone know that in camp yesterday. CeCe, how important is Gronk to this Patriots offense?
Oh, he's important now. We know that Edelman is suspended for the first four games. Tom Brady, how many stellar seasons does he have left in him? How long does the window stay open? As long as they have Brady and they have Gronk, the window's going to be open. So it becomes very, very important. And Gronk, with his injuries, concussions, broken bones, forearm, like every season could be his last.
And they not only don't have Edelman for the first four games, they don't have Nate Solder for the entire season. And Gronk's one of the best, if not the best, down-the-line blockers at tight end in the league. So he is, I think, without question, the second most important player on the Patriots offense behind only their quarterback.
All right, moving on to the Seahawks now. Pete Carroll had some harsh words for All-Pro safety Earl Thomas. Carroll says of Thomas, quote, he should be here and he's not here. Thomas, of course, is holding out. CeCe, how do you think this situation ends?
I think they're going to have to trade him. You know, they've moved on from the other members of the Legion of Boom, and they're going to move on from Earl Thomas. He doesn't want to be there because he wants a contract. And they're not going to give him a contract at this stage of his career, which would be his third contract. Earl's still got a lot of good football left in him. The only resolution is to let him go and either try to get a player or a draft pick.
Yeah, and I think you could get a decent draft pick for Earl Thomas still. Like, his value is somewhat lessened because, you know, when you trade for him, you do have to give him that contract. But, I mean, could you get a third-round pick for Earl Thomas? I think you probably could. And Seattle's done a great job with those types of mid-round picks, and they're clearly trying to reboot the thing. Earl's going to play this year. I would be very surprised if it's for the Seahawks.
All right, moving on. Jarvis Landry's got some high hopes for the Browns this year. And when I say high hopes, he thinks this team has the potential to score 40 points a game and then go on to win the Super Bowl. That is exactly what he said. Nick, do you think the Browns can do just that? 40 points?
Instead of 40 points a game, let's say 40 points in a game. See, you know the last time the Browns had a 40-point football game? 2009. It's 140 games, longest streak in the NFL. That's when Jarvis was in high school. Listen, I understand, like, you shoot for the stars, you land on the moon type of thing, but
You shoot.
Go ahead.
I think you shoot for the moon.
Well, and if you land in the stars, that wouldn't work geographically, but maybe I got the phrase wrong. Either way, I understand what he's trying to do. He seems to be a little overly optimistic.
Okay, Jarvis Landry, this is Chris Carter. I'm willing to challenge you. They paid you a lot of money. I'm willing to bet some of that money. How many games you guys score? You won't score more than we have people on this set, all right? We got three people on this set. I guarantee you won't score 40 points three times, let alone averages. Call me. Hit me up. I know you got money, so I know you can depart from that. So let's do that. Let's do it, number 80. Let's go.
Okay. I like that.
All right. And finally, Kirk Cousins is enjoying his new home with the Vikings. Cousins says he's been welcomed by Minnesota and added that he's been accepted and given permission to lead. Chris, how much different will the Vikings offense look with Kirk Cousins?
It's not going to look that much different than what we've seen. The normal football fan, they won't be able to tell the difference. I'll be able to tell the difference because I know there won't be a restriction on the playbook. There won't be a harness and a noose around the quarterback. I mean, to be able to restrain them from doing certain types of things because it's overall ability. And the leadership thing becomes very important. They don't have a lot of high-profile individuals on their offense. Their offensive line is being rebuilt and is the weakest part of their team. Their skilled guys are just down-to-earth, middle-round draft picks. Stephon Diggs, not high maintenance. Thielen is a Minnesota product, quiet as can be. Both of them very, very successful at what they do. We know who the running back injured last year, Dalvin Cook, coming back in year number two. So they need his leadership, and they gave that to him when they signed him. Listen, we want you to be a leader. We want you to be outspoken. They got all the big guns over on the defense. So I think it's an easy transition for him to take over this team because they don't have to score 28 points a game to win.
No.
They know that he knows the last 5 years they've been a top five defense, and he knows that he can rest on that and he can just take his time, be methodical as far as marching down the field and utilizing the tools that he has.
You're obviously correct that he will have the full playbook at his disposal. He will be able to take more chances, throw the ball more than Case Keenum, what they allowed him to do, even if they don't need him necessarily to do that. That's why they signed him. But from a statistical standpoint, they don't need Kirk Cousins to be better than Case Keenum was last year. Like, Case Keenum statistically was really, really good last year. The reason they paid him all that money and let Case go was they didn't think that was duplicable long-term, year over year, what Case did, and they want to squeeze a little bit more out of the offense. But they, what you're saying about the defense, the big guns on the defense, and what the Vikings know and anyone that follows the league knows is those, they have drafted incredibly well. And most of those big guns are still on their rookie contracts. And so this is a critical year for Minnesota, at least in my eyes, because you have as much blue chip talent on that team as I think you will have during the Kirk Cousins contract, because some of those guys will depart via free agency. Right? This team was good enough, in my opinion, to win a Super Bowl last year. I think there were a few teams that could have won a Super Bowl last year. Philadelphia obviously ended up being the only one that did, but Minnesota was right there. They were as good as you could be without winning a Super Bowl, and they got better at the most important position. So, I mean, I think optimism should be super high in Minnesota, as long as, and see, always brings us up when we talk about them, the offensive line is your only question mark. It was last year, goes into this year as well. Your one big question mark with them is how good and how healthy can that offensive line be?
All right, let's move on to the Browns now. And Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick, is settling into his first NFL training camp rather nicely. One of his first moves, parking an RV outside training camp as a quarterback's only clubhouse for himself and for Tyrod Taylor. Little rascals. Right now, he's currently the backup behind Tyrod, and this is something he's struggling to get used to.
I would never get my mind right to be a backup. That's the second that I would be complacent. That's the second that I would stop working. You always got to keep working like you're going to work to be the best. And that's the same thing Tyrod's done his whole life as well. And it doesn't matter the position you're in. If you're not going to work hard, then you're not doing it right.
Does it bother you when Hugh says that you're not probably not going to get a bunch of first-team reps just because, you know, they're trying to get Tyrod ready?
No, absolutely not. You know, they're doing everything they think is right, and I believe in that. I believe in them. And so when it comes down to the stuff that they're saying, that's not going to change my work ethic. And if it does, then something's wrong.
All right, CeCe, what will Baker Mayfield's biggest challenge be now adjusting from college to the NFL, where he thinks he very much could be a starter here week one?
Well, the number one thing is the amount of reps that he's going to get in practice. When you're a star player, that be in the NFL or in college, even if you get a certain look, the coach will give you a certain offense, a certain play to run. You'll run that play against the defense. Say you throw an interception. As a star player, you got to like, okay, coach, can I see that again? They'll run the play over for you. When you start getting NFL, all the practices are charted. Every play is charted. Now, they will redo a couple plays during the course of the day, but you're not going to have the power and authority to get the types of reps to be able to develop the type of confidence you're going to have. And he's going to see guys moving faster than he's ever seen. And I don't care what level of football that he's played. And he played at a high level there at Oklahoma, and they got good players, but he's never seen defensive backs the way he's going to see the type of coverage. So the game is foreign to you, and the game is moving faster. They say, oh, and a defensive tackle in the NFL, he can get sideline to sideline. You know, we don't have any Ted Washington guys, 370 pounds, and only can play in one or two gaps and only can play first, second. No, it's about speed. It's about getting to the quarterback. So those are some of the things that you're not getting as many reps. The game's foreign to you, and you see that, man, my talent level, it don't stand out on this field. So it's a shock to your system early in your pro career.
What's the bigger shock to your system, do you think? The mental aspect of it, particularly at that position, all the volume that you have to be able to recite, different way plays are called instead of holding up pictures of people on the sideline, or the speed and physicality aspect?
The speed and physicality, it's frightening. It's frightening, too, when you think you've played football at its highest level and you start to see that, wow, I didn't know who this guy was, and this guy is really, really good. So I think that initially your brain has to get adjusted to, man, I've been very successful, little league, middle school, high school, college dominated. Now I'm just a name or a number.
I'm glad you used the word frightening. Because you've shared off the air and I think on the air talking about when you first got to the NFL and you weren't yet Chris Carter. I mean, you were, but you weren't yet Chris Carter. And it was your 1 year playing special teams. and frightening is a word, and you're a prideful guy, and you've talked about what the experience was of just seeing those types of athletes at every single spot on the field.
Yeah, and my responsibility, even being a high draft pick, and they thought my future was bright. I was running on the kickoff team, and I was on the kickoff receiving team. And that right there was, I had never seen anything like that. I hadn't returned kicks, not in college. I had returned kicks in high school. But the NFL, man, they kick that opening kickoff to you. It's, the guys are moving so fast. And the special teams coach been yelling at you, don't drop the ball. Don't drop the ball. It's like, man, that's what I do. The one thing I can do, if you want to secure the possession, I can do that. Now, as far as running, and I just thought it was going to be wide open. And my special teams coach was Jeff Fisher. He said, hey, Jeff, Chris, you got to hit this like you're hitting the turnstile at the turnpike. I was like, I ain't never drove on the turnpike. He said, man, you know, you're coming up on the turnstile, and you got the easy pass on your thing, and you're like, oh, they're supposed to open the gate, but sometimes the gate don't open. I was like, I'm going to have to get used to that because that's the type of collision that I'm not built for. So I told the guy, man, listen, first dude touch me on the kickoff, I'm going down. Ain't going to be no yards after contact. Ain't nobody going to blast me and everything. No. Ain't no. That right there, that was my introduction to the league and ultimately trying to be comfortable with that and trying to even be a role player. Man, it was a huge adjustment. And I played from the time I stepped on Ohio State's campus. I was playing.
You were playing, and you were, yeah. I mean, you were All-American. You were MVP of every bowl game you ever played in. And you were known for being a tough wide receiver.
Man, there was one time we played the Jets, the last game of my rookie year, and my season was abbreviated because I missed training camp. And everybody here in New York, because of the scandal with the agent, Norby Walters, and the crowd was yelling, Norby, and they were jingling car keys because I got suspended from college for taking money and everything. And, man, I was pumped up. Yeah, kick it to me. And, man, right before they kicked it, man, I was like, man, I wish I was in college. A tear just went down the right side of my cheek. Said, man, I wish I was at Ohio Stadium right now. So there's some huge adjustments that you have to make physically and mentally. And these, I mean, and that's real. And Baker's going to go through that.
What about all the non-football stuff for a guy like Baker that he has to deal with? Then there's going to be 10 times more media scrutiny. There's going to be 10 times more questions.
Yeah.
There's more obligations that he's going to have to do. His time is not going to be as much his own as it is belonging to the team.
And when he does play, Jenna, for the first time, he's going to have to answer questions about playing bad. When's the last time Baker Mayfield had a bad game where they lost because he made mistakes?
Correct. Before, he sort of represented the team in college. He represents the team now as the face of this organization and not necessarily the face of a university. How much of an adjustment is that going to be?
This is the thing. I think Baker's ready for this. You're talking about a guy who's a tremendous overachiever. Him and his dad got into a knockdown dragout in high school because his dad wanted him to walk on somewhere, and Baker was like, I'm not walking on anywhere. I deserve a scholarship. He thought he should be a Division I player at a big-time conference. His dad was like, you need to go to Texas Tech and walk on. You need to listen to me. Baker's like, I'm not listening to you. And he finally, listen, I'm going to go there and walk on. Won a scholarship. Ended up leaving there, going to Oklahoma. Did the same thing again at Oklahoma. Took them job for them five-star recruits. So I believe that he has the wherewithal. Now, typically, we don't know what this guy is going to do. But I believe Baker Mayfield and the intel that they did on him, the Browns want him to succeed. But he's going to have to be successful at doing a lot of different things that he, as a college player, this will be his first time being introduced to it.
Good stuff. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, Kevin Durant responds to his critics. Hear it from him next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Stu Jackson, here we go. Former NBA head coach, current associate commissioner of the Big East is with us again. It's great to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here.
I believe that.
Yes.
It's a day of the week. So,
we
Kevin,
know.
It's a
Jenna
game
doing
of the week.
Jenna things.
Yeah. So, hashtag. We're never going to hashtag back. Hashtag Jenna doing Jenna things.
It is a day of the week. So, Kevin Durant is in the news for something that's not game related. After making headlines for a podcast exchange he had with CJ McCollum, one that extended onto Twitter, one that involved responding to total strangers in a defensive manner, KD spoke out about how exasperating the media has been. Take a listen.
It's just to the point where I know what you're upset at. Just say it instead of just trying to, you know, make excuses. You know what I'm saying? I got too many texts, or I talk too much on Instagram, or I talk too much on Twitter, I don't know how to talk to my teammates. So I'm angry, I'm insecure, I'm sensitive. Tell me what the real problem is. Because every time I say something, I go about my business. And when I say something, who's House of Highlights and Bleacher Report gas y'all up and y'all run with it. And as soon as I say something back, I'm the sensitive one. I mean, I know y'all trying to make me look crazy and discredit me and strip me of my credibility, but I see what you're doing. But I'm going to still keep standing.
In that one comment, he admitted he reads everything. He watches everything.
Oh, no, he
knows
does,
what
no.
everyone's saying about him, and that could very well be his first problem.
He watches our show, Jenna. He's not happy with some of the comments you made about him. He's texted a couple people out there. So I'm
not surprised. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm not surprised at all. But I have reason. Stu, what'd you think of KD's comments?
I'm going a different direction. I think it would be easy to be critical of his comments, and I don't really want to go there. I would say my memo to KD would be this, is that you are not crazy. What you are is the second best player on the planet and arguably will go down as one of the top 15 players ever in the NBA, and that's being conservative, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. The second thing is, all right, this is bigger than you, Kevin, all right? It's about your legacy that you're going to leave in this game and about you as a person, all right? Don't worry about the media. Engage them and dismiss them. Take a break and a page out of LeBron's book. Get off of social media, all right? Just take a break and then hire a competent PR professional, which I think is crucial for the rest of your career. And then the good news is, this image that you have now can be rehabilitated in time. So that's the real positive. So I'm going by way of the formula to rehab this situation because I don't want to be critical because I don't know what you can say.
He can't stay away. He's said he wants – you're right. He probably does have to if he wants all of this stuff to go and if he does want to rehab his reputation. But he's already said, I'm off social media, and 5 seconds later, he's back on. He said, I'm not going to engage anymore, and he re-engages. There's something in him that is compelled to have to react to everything that's out there.
Well, you know, one thing I would offer is that, and I said this yesterday, he's a little bit of a product of the social media communication mm-hmm. age. And my recommendation would be this, is that he's from a terrific family. He has great role models. Right? He needs to go back and talk to those people, all right? His mother, his relatives, the people that have guided him, they may have a different view of what this situation is here publicly for him to help him move forward.
There's a level of this that I empathize with heavily because it feels like an odd self-destructive mechanism. Because here's the thing, professionally, his life could not be going better. He is, as you mentioned, one of the two greatest players in the world. He is already, if he stopped playing today, I think he's one of the 30 greatest players ever. And you're talking about where he could end up in the Pantheon. He's a minted champion. He's got generational upon generational wealth on the court and off the court. So that's an A-plus going in his life. Let's take the really important stuff you do, charitable works. He has done amazing things in his communities, whether it be Oklahoma City, his hometown, or in the Bay Area.
He showed up at a touch football game in Oklahoma City.
He does that, and in the Bay Area, I just read recently, I'm talking over $10 million of his money into the community for young people. All these things. The only way he can be talked about negatively is by doing these things to himself on social media. So that's why I said it's self-destructive. And those comments there, it's an odd victim complex, like, oh, you guys are all out to get me. We didn't spin the wheel of NBA stars and land on Kevin Durant. He's the only one that acts like this. He's the only NBA star that has decided I'm going to act online like I'm not who I am. And whether it's fair or not, you have to, at this point, a year and a half in, recognize people are going to react accordingly. People on these shows, your peers otherwise, are going to say, why are you acting like
that? Yeah, there's two traits that I really hate in people. And hate is not too strong of a word. Number one is when people are lazy. And the only thing that I hate more than the people are lazy are the talented people that are lazy. Now, Kevin Durant's not that. Nick, you'll know this because we have talks about it all the time. I hate people who don't have perspective. And the only thing I hate more than people who don't have perspective are people that are in the public eye, famous or being rich, and they don't have perspective. I mean, I get on the subway after I leave here. I know what I'm dealing with. I'm in New York City. I got perspective on who I am, where I am, and what I'm doing all the time. And that's just something that Kevin Durant, he doesn't have. Because he said, hey, man, you guys read Bleacher Report, you get gassed up and everything. He acts like he's just a normal citizen. Man, when you are playing sports, man, you surrender what your privacy is. You surrender all those things for the limelight and the benefits that you can make $30 million dribbling a basketball. Those things you surrender. And that right there, Kevin doesn't understand or have the type of perspective. So for me, I got no problem with Kevin Durant's basketball game. I love him. He's a superstar, man. His game is amazing. I've been watching the NBA for 40 years. And he's special. Out of all the players, I mean, he is a special, special player. Now, have I seen other people in the limelight struggle with getting a grip on the reality of and the gravity of it? Yeah, and Kevin Durant would be in that class.
And I got a good piece of advice early in my radio career. And again, I'm not trying to compare myself to Kevin Durant at all, except in this way. As soon as you go into media, you're a public figure to a degree. Like, he's a true superstar celebrity. I was just a local public figure. And I was struggling a lot with the same thing KD seems to be dealing with, which is strangers on the internet talking trash to me. Twitter was new to me, and it bothered me. I would combat with them. And a buddy of mine had been doing media for a long time. He said, hey, Nick. He said, you can always just go get a job at Home Depot. And then nothing against anyone who works at Home Depot. He's like, guess what will never happen to you at Home Depot? Someone walk up to you in the saw aisle and say, you know what? Your takes suck. You suck. He's like, but you've opted in. You have opted into being a public figure. There's a lot of cool things that come along with it. Maybe when you're at Home Depot, they give you a discount because they like you. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things that go along with it. You can't accept all the good and act as if the few bad things don't exist. And the thing that is so perplexing to me is all of our other superstar athletes seem to get it. Like, LeBron hadn't had a bad tweet in 18, his whole career. Steph, I don't even know if Steph's on Twitter. Like, and people come after Steph's wife's restaurant on Yelp. Like, all these guys. James Harden learned, oh, I'm too big of a star to go to the strip club every night. Like, he had to deal with that when he got to Houston. Like, he thought he could, realized, no, they gave me a max deal. People are going to. It's an odd blind spot to just, for him, because he tweeted yesterday, oh, because I'm in the NBA, I can't be on Twitter. Man, Spencer Dinwiddie can.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
how does this play out if you see this forward? This isn't going to affect him on the court. This isn't going to affect his time in Golden State. This isn't going to affect other teams from bringing him in if he wants to leave. I mean, if he doesn't change, which he seemed to have a hard time doing, how do you see this playing out for a guy like Kevin Durant?
Well, I alluded to it earlier. I really believe it affects his legacy negatively. He's done so many great things on the floor and off the floor, as Nick mentioned. And to me, that's who he really is. I think that's who he's always been. But, you know, he's just missed something here. You called it a blind spot. I had an old coach tell me one time, Chris, and you can learn from old coaches, a guy by the name of Jimmy Lynam. He used to coach in Philadelphia, St. Joe's, became an NBA coach. And he said to me one time, he said, Stewie, you know what the key to life is? You got to know who you are. That's what he always said. And he said, what I suggest to you is always just try to be a normal guy. And I would say the same thing to Kevin Durant. Know who you are. And he has all the signs around him. He's embraced by other NBA players that he could speak to about this issue. He's, you know, he's fortunate enough to have a wonderful family, a wonderful mother that I'm sure would engage in that conversation with him and give him advice. Use those people to help sort of mold and get back and present who you really are.
It's good stuff. All right, Stu Jackson, thanks so much for being with us today.
If I can get these two to listen to you.
That is
My goodness. I have my wallet. I'll give you a 100 spot for preaching.
Is he right that he could be one of the best Stu. Next on First Things
put
First?
In the collection plate?
Yeah, Jimmy Lynam told me, Jenna, I need you to know who you are.
I know.
Nick, wrong. I need you to know you wrong.
Back here on First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini's back with us. What's up, C?
Know who you are. I'm taking that with me, Stu.
Stu gave us some good advice in the last segment.
Absolutely
said,
right.
Know who you are as a person, as an athlete, as a former head coach, all of it.
As the tooth fairy.
I listen.
As all of it.
As the tooth fairy. Ezekiel Elliott is gearing up for a full season of play, unlike last year when he had a partial season of play. Zeke had to serve a six-game suspension midway through despite missing that time, though he still rushed for nearly 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones is all in on Zeke.
In the short term, I think he wants to be one of the great ones to play the game. And I think he's a hardworking guy who knows what it takes. And, I think he's... You know, it's a process, and I think he continues to mature. And as Jason said, he's taking a leadership role now. And, I expect him to really step up, I think, and have a great year this year.
Very sunny there in Dallas. It's bright. It's a
Everyone's
bright
wearing shades
Everybody,
yesterday.
Yeah. Coach, what can Zeke improve on to do what Stephen Jones said, to be one of the greats in this league at that position?
Well, this is going to be really interesting to watch because it's different than Dak's situation. And Zeke has a great offensive line, and that really helps him with the things that he's doing. But what they don't have is a consistent passing threat. So in his first year, having Dez and having Jason Witten, that does help you in the running game. Now we come into the second year, his average goes down almost a yard per carry. I know there were, the suspension, but we're still talking about a yard per carry. Mm-hmm. Going into this year, nobody's going to be worried about the passing game. That's not going to be the issue. Everybody's going to go into each one of these game plans and say, okay, how do we stop Zeke? And the question is whether he can perform at a high level with that situation. And the greatest that I've ever seen do that was Adrian Peterson. And those games that he had against Green Bay where he was going for the record, they had 10 guys in the box. They weren't worried about the passing game at all, and he still averaged 10 yards a carry. It was unbelievable to watch. Now, Zeke, if he wants to be one of the greatest ever, needs to be able to put on performances like that, or a guy like Barry Sanders. I remember in 97, we played him, and we worked so hard to try to leverage him.
Is that the 2,000-yard season?
Yes, it was the 2,000, and we barely missed the playoffs because we had him contained, and then he was able to break one in the fourth quarter, which changed the whole game, and he had nowhere near the offensive line that Dallas had, but everybody was getting ready for those two players, and they still found a way to be productive, which I think is really hard.
So what are we going to see from Zeke at this point in his career? Say, absent of what he went through last year, what would our expectations be? If he hadn't been suspended, what would our expectations be? He'd be like, man, how special is Zeke going to be? So special running backs, typically between years 3 and 5, you know what they do? They get close to that 2,000 yards. Yeah. So I'm looking for what would the numbers look like, 1,600 to 2,000 yards, either combined yards from scrimmage or rushing, because that's what the greatest of the game have done. What do I expect him to do in year number 3? I expect him to be better than year 1 and 2 out of the backfield and combined what production that he puts out because of that offensive line and because of lack of wide receivers. He's got to touch the ball 400 times. And I expect Zeke to rush for 1,600 to 2,000 yards because that's the special type of player. Now absent of a Romo, of a Witten, and Dez Bryant, he's also got to be a good leader. Now, one thing Zeke has in his favor, this is the first time he really hadn't been injured or distracted since he left Ohio State. And I know in talking to his dad, him and Zeke, they were really looking forward to it because his overall weight training, his overall conditioning, they believe to be at an all-time high. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do in year number 3 with Zeke.
Hey, Coach, I'm really glad you bring up those two players and those seasons because I think in sports, one of the true ways to determine greatness is, does the opponent know what you're trying to do, and can you still do it? You know what I mean? It's not from a coaching schematic, it's probably the opposite. Like, get the opponent to think you want to do one thing and go do something else. But as a player, okay, the old Larry Allen story I love. Here's how great I am. I'm going to tell you, we're running behind me. You still can't stop it because I'm that good. And that is what those guys were able to do. That Barry Sanders season, he finished with 2,053 yards. He had 53 yards exactly his first two games. He had 2,000 yards in the final 14 games of the season. He was as good of a season as anybody's ever had. I'm not saying Zeke has to do that, but something along the lines of, we know you got to give the ball to Zeke. We know Allen Hurns is your most credible receiving threat. Jeff Swaim is your only tight end who has a single receiving yard in this league. It's got to run through Zeke. But the point that you mentioned about Zeke diversifying his game, the way the league is going, man, these running backs have to be credible pass catchers. Like, Adrian Peterson is a unique guy in that he was in this era, and I know it was a few years earlier, but in this era, dominant without ever being a great pass catching threat. I think we're moving away from that. I think it's Todd Gurley's, Alvin Kamara's, Kareem Hunt's, Le'Veon Bell's, guys who are great runners but also credible passing threats. That's the part of his game, as far as an improvement standpoint, that I think he needs to work on to take him to the next
level. Well, one thing that offenses are doing against defensive, sometimes those are easier touches. Given how easy it is to throw the ball and how quarterbacks are synced in, instead of jamming the ball up the middle, I'd much rather swing you out because of the matchup and get you into some type of space, because football has changed and the skill and requirements of the running backs, they have to evolve with the changes.
Yeah, I just don't know how much he's going to be able to evolve. Typically, once those guys are in the league and it's been 1 or 2 years, you kind of see where they are in the pass game, and maybe there'll be some type of jump. But you look at it from an offensive standpoint, do you want to take the chance of dropping back, throwing the ball, he's got to catch it, or just turn and hand it to the guy and see what he does? I mean, averaging 5 yards a carry, that's pretty good on most passes. Yeah, maybe he may break it a little bit bigger, but it's pretty solid bets.
Let me ask you this, and maybe in my head at least, the hits you take as a running back if it's on a pass versus the hits you take on a run don't always seem the same. Like, as far as being able to, A, necessarily get out of bounds easier, B, the size of the people tackling you tends to be different if you're going up against secondary players or even outside or linebacker players as opposed to defensive linemen. If they want to use Zeke at the volume that I expect them to want to use Zeke, there's a difference between 25 carries and 25 touches, right? Like, as far as his durability over the course of the season.
Well, the one thing Coach is saying, though, you have to be careful, because if he's unfamiliar, say if we want to give Adrian Peterson 400 touches, but we're going to put him in space 50 times, well, he's more apt to get hurt being in space, not being familiar with it, compared to if he gets jammed up and there's nothing there, he's not going to get hurt, but he's not going to try to bounce it outside and make a negative play or put his body in jeopardy. Does that make sense, Coach?
It makes total sense. And the other thing is, when we used to play Adrian Peterson, and if they did split him out, it was like, whew, all right, that's great. We know he's not. We know they're not going to hand him the ball. Like, we felt better covering him than we ever than dealing with him. And by keeping him in the backfield, it creates things for everybody else. Going back to the Barry Sanders season that we talked about, I think the main difference between Barry and Zeke right now in terms of whether or not he's going to have 2,000 yards is the offensive line. That Detroit offensive line wasn't anywhere near what we're talking about in Dallas. So he should be able to approach something like that with the volume of carries that Chris is talking about.
Do we all assume that the volume of carries is going to go up, his production is going to go up, his numbers are going to go up, given that coming into this season, they know what the Cowboys receiving core looks like, and every team is scheming against basically Ezekiel Elliott?
Yeah, I knew Jerry Rice was going to run them slants, but you know what? Kept seeing those highlights. There he goes. What did he run? He ran a slant. What did he do? He ran out the back door, keep going for a touchdown, as Nick talked about. They're not good at running the ball. They're great at running the ball. They have three great offensive linemen and a great tailback. So I still think they're going to be able to run it. You still, to do it on a ridiculous level, you got to be able to throw the ball. You got to be able to try to make it a little easier for them.
Yeah, give them some sort of relief or some break in there at some point.
All right, Coach, thanks for joining us all week.
Great job all week.
Good to be here.
Loved having you. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.